You're listening to a Toe Network production, putting heroes on trial because someone has to. Tired of the discourse in writer fandom? Looking for something to put that bounce in your step and a bee in your bonnet? Then look no further than the Uncommon Cast RX, Active Ingredients, Aleph, Amit, Claire, Gomez Q, Neji Rayon, Professor What, Sona, The Imposter. Side effects may include Heiseiitis, Showa Fever, Helper Robotophobia, and an English Lilt. Listeners, this is Amit, and I am back with Claire and Todd here. Say hello to the audience, please.
Where have we been? You're back. I'm here. We're all back.
Yes, and after the debacle that was Kiva 7, we're back here to, have a peppy conversation talking about Kiva 8. Not Kiva 8, but our 8th Kiva conversation. We'll be discussing episodes 43 through 46, and then we'll have an episode after that talking about the, what I'm assuming will be a huge, impactful, crazy, final two episodes. So
I think this is a series that's mercifully low on debacles. We've done okay so far.
Right. I guess I'll start off, I will start off now with the little summary for episode 43. King all but kills Atoya and strips Maya of her power and Fangire hood. Taiga kills Shima and Watru accidentally kills Mio, trying to avenge him. Oh, wow.
A lot happening, huh?
Yeah, and I guess I'll just start off by saying that... I'll start off with my notes, which I'm totally out of context for now, but we'd never seen Shima act this way. I think it's very effective to have this history established with him and suddenly alter his manner to highlight the change he has experienced. And I'm probably talking about how much he's hated the Fangire, even though he took Taiga on and raised him as his own, and then of course he fell. Or, had the unfortunate thing happen to him where he was turned into a Fangire, and I believe he asked to be killed at some point. Do you remember that?
Yeah, vaguely. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. But, like you said, it's strange to see Shima acting this way, and prior to this happening, even though I've seen the series before, I wasn't really expecting to learn anything more about him or see different sides to his personality. I was kind of happy with where we were,
It's really sad to see how wrong Taiga and Mio are, because they want to depend on Watru to make them both happy, in different ways, of course, but they both want to be close to him, and they think that he will save them from what otherwise would be like a sad, lonely existence. And unfortunately, you can't really... It's not fair... to do that to somebody, to count on them like that.
Well,
but it's interesting to see.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not going to end well.
Oh yeah, of course not. Especially because the wanting of him is in two totally different ways, and they're mutually exclusive. Yes, that is the right way to say that, right?
Sure, yeah. And it's the whole series is about self-actualization anyway. So I mean, they're completely... anti-message, aren't they, these two? Don't get the show at all.
Yeah, I guess they don't. Okay, so my next note is, Taiga, not alone, and happy are not the same thing. You can't sacrifice someone else's life to shore yourself up. But then again, he is a Fangire. It is in his nature, right?
I guess. A lot of Fangire are really nice. I think it's more the fact that he's been raised to be the king.
Yeah, it's no more than people.
Yeah, I'm over the Fangire nature thing. I think we're meant to be by this point in the show, really.
Yeah. Eat a pig, eat a cow.
I think it's due to his specific upbringing that's made him like this.
I can see some merit in that, especially with how he acts later on. And maybe it's more nurture than nature is what I should have said, because that seems to be more correct. Let's see. I'm going to skip my point about Mio. Okay, so I have come to the realization, and I was probably feeling for him before, but, you know, at this point I can say that Taiga is truly a sad figure. He's defending someone who might actually, who might have actually tried to kill him. I just want to talk to him and tell him that everything will be okay and that I love him, even though I'm, cattle to him.
He's honorable, isn't he, even though he's, kind of anti-human with it.
Yeah, I think that is the point at which you really have to, no matter who you are as a viewer, you have to admit that he has a great deal of emotional trauma, like deep-rooted emotional issues, abandonment problems. He's proper messed up, this kid.
Mm.
And you can't think of him as just like this bad guy.
Yeah. Kind of different to Shadow Moon, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, in a lot of fantastic ways.
I mean, sure, it's still brainwashing.
Right.
But the fact that he truly believes he's doing the right thing is what makes Taiga interesting to watch.
He's desperate at that point, really. Mm. Like, he's just completely denying reality. She did do something. It's quite clear. Mm. And he just says, he doesn't try to explain it or try to forgive her or whatever. He just says it didn't happen. It did happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's an awkward thing to watch because it's, it can be compared to a lot of things, but he just tries to sweep it under the rug and keep moving forward and say, no, it's okay, it's okay. And I think you're right, it is because he's so desperate.
On the other hand, though, I can't completely blame her. Those atrocious wedding rituals. It's really quite obviously appalling. Because in a lot of marriage traditions, you'll get hand fasting, like literal tying of hands, but it's usually together.
Yeah.
Not just the bloke chains up the girl's hands and then he has a drink and then he lets her have some, I guess. It's complete ownership. It's like overt. This is rubbish. This is bad for her. This is taking her life away from her. It's completely, it makes her a complete submissive and she doesn't really have a choice. You know, of course you'd stab someone to get out of that.
And neither of them's into it anyway, are they? Not really. It's the silly thing about the whole situation.
But it's quite nice to see the show be so black and white about it.
Mm.
Like, it really doesn't try to suggest that it's okay to be the queen. It just doesn't at all. It's definitely not. It's rubbish.
Mm.
Which is good because Mia is not a particularly sympathetic character on the whole, as we've discussed. So giving her at least something is nice. Bit of a balancing act.
Yeah, I suppose so. I was totally not expecting her to die, though. Like Shima, I was pretty sure it was going to happen. But, you know, the fact that sparked Wataru to become so vengeful, and not even necessarily in a negative way, although, you know, vengeance isn't great, but, like, it's understandable.
Uh-huh.
I don't see that as a major flaw for him as a character or a great inconsistency because this is somebody who had a connection with his dad who, you know, he never had and he's been trying to do all this good and then he gets, you know, killed. he had a very human, very understandable reaction, but then it really made me sad to see him getting ready to kill Taiga, and then it just got worse when Mio stepped in there, and I don't know, it was really awful. Mm-hmm. Maybe I was very upset. I think I may have been shocked. I might have exclaimed, but I can't recall right now.
Yeah, I don't think I expected her to die. How about you?
No, you being me, by the way, because we're in the same room.
Are you the only one there?
That's true. I can't remember now. Because I remember liking the fact that she died so much.
Yeah, me too.
In a morbid
because it
kind
is,
of way.
It is a frigging.
Yeah.
But it sort of explains why anyone ever thought that the act behind the fridging was a good idea, because it... I'll explain it in a different way. In the film Ginger Snaps, spoilers, so plug your ears or go and watch it quickly. There's
pause, then go and watch
it. Yeah, it's very good, you'll like it. It's a werewolf film.
Werewolves and are interested in girls.
But,
for whatever reason.
The main character knows this boy, and it's like, there's sexual tension, but it's not really boring sexual tension, and it's not overt, it's not like, can I make it any more obvious kind of territory, it's more interesting than that. But he dies. And I really, really like that he dies. I'm really glad that he dies, even though it's sad, because it means that his role in the film and, like, his symbolic worth belongs to her, the main character. He is part of her growth and part of her memories and her becoming, like, the whole point of the film, as with many films, is for the main character to experience something and grow and become a better main character, or a more full main character, a more experienced main character. And so I really enjoy that he doesn't make it to the end. He doesn't go off and have his own other life after the film. Everything that he was that appearance, and now that belongs to her, and that embiggens her as a person and as a character, and it means that she doesn't have to answer to anyone else. Like, she can't meet him 10 years later, and he's all like, oh, it was like this, and she's like, no, it wasn't, and he ruins it. He's dead. It's all belonging to her now. And I kind of like that Mayu dies in the same way for Watari, because this is a coming-of-age story for him. So I enjoy that that entire story of their little first romance. That's everything now, and it belongs to him, and he's the only one who can define it, and it can't be retroactively changed. She can't turn out to, like, be a racist or whatever. You know, like, she can't turn out to have terrible politics or to spread rumours about him or to reveal that when they bought that top together she was actually thinking about something else or whatever. It's all his now, and it's all for him. And that does take something away from her as a... Well, as a human, it takes something away from her. And that is why it's so problematic when it happens in everything, and every guy just has a girl who died so that he looks cooler, because that makes it institutional, and that makes a big impact on culture as a whole, which is something I've been saying a lot about Kiba. It's a shame that it exists in a stupid patriarchy, because it weakens a lot of the things that are used so strongly in this particular story. If the rest of society and if the rest of, like, the cultural fictional landscape were different, then Kiba wouldn't be dragged down by everyone else's nonsense. But as it is, which is why I can't argue too much when people say so-and-so is a bit sexist, so-and-so isn't good to women, Kamen Rider as a franchise isn't good to women, because it's not. Kiba as a story is good to its characters, but that doesn't mean that it necessarily adds to a strong support of women in fiction or pop culture, because unfortunately it technically doesn't. It does too in other ways, but looked at as a whole from a distance, not so much. Which is a bummer, but for the time that I'm watching Kiba, I'm only thinking about Kiba, and so I can really enjoy it, and I can be quite pleased that she did die.
I like it because so few writers have that.
What, death?
A dead, innocent girlfriend, or whatever, boyfriend, what, you know, love interest. Right?
Yeah, I mean, Tackle's the only one that comes to mind. But
no, no romance there. Not going to buy that one. There was no romance there. I'm talking full-on what's a Romeo romantic storyline.
A Scorpio?
What?
In that weird end of Agito?
Scorpio?
Is that not what they call
that? I don't remember. Oh, the biker lady. God, I don't remember. No, because that's nowhere near as built up, is it?
No, it's not.
You know what I mean? There's nothing that compares to Ataru Mio, at least not in any series I've seen.
No, not with the...
With But take order. Spoil yourself. 3 episodes to get to know a character, a love interest. It's explicitly romantic, and then they die. I can't think of any other Rider series where that happened.
Kamen Rider the First.
I can't think of any other Toku where that happened. So that's why I like it, just because it was so surprising.
Yeah, good point, good point. Are we ready to move on to 44?
I have one more note for this episode, and it's very short. It's just that Nago's actor, I think he doesn't get enough credit, to be honest, because when he is talking to Shima in the cafe from the side, Shima's side onto the camera, and Nago's behind him, so he's facing the camera. He holds his arms in such a way, it just expresses this incredibly deep, extreme insecurity. And it's not something that you would notice, it's just he has no idea how to be physically around people. And it's such a small detail, but it chimes with everything we've seen of his character. And it's such a precise detail. I think it's really good. It really expresses a lot of, like, real character, because it doesn't matter, really. It's not something that's incredibly important, but it just added, it expands the world for me. It makes it seem a lot more human. It reminds me of real people who are bad at being social, but do their best. So well done, him.
That's neat. Okay, so 44. Watcher distraught by Mio's death goes back in time to erase himself from existence and save his love. And, man, I really like that concept. I think, I'm pretty sure I remember hearing somebody explicitly complain about Watcher being awful because of that, and, or the show in general being bad because of that, but I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I like it.
Because I think it's reflective of feelings that people have when they lose somebody in, like, a tragic way or in an accident or something. I mean, it's not surprising to hear thoughts from a person such as, I wish I had been there instead, or, you know, things in that line, that the pain is just so great that you just don't want to be anymore so that you don't have to feel it. And if it could save the person, that would be even greater. So, very human, very cool.
Well, I suppose if we have to have time travel again, at least nothing is changed. And he realizes the futility of wanting to change the past.
It reinforces the previous instances, I think, because it uses them and it refers to them and it softens the whole effect of, oh, suddenly time travel.
Yeah.
It makes it sort of come full circle and retroactively makes me go, time travel, it's not so bad.
No, like I said, yeah, the fact that it's ultimately futile makes it better.
Yeah, it didn't really bother me because I think the door gimmick about it is so, I don't know, easy and neat.
That's true.
When Otoya and Yuri are in the hospital, she says some line about having a woman's fickle heart, and I don't know how to feel about that. I guess I've experienced it anecdotally, and I suppose seeing your lover almost killed can help mend things, if only temporarily.
I think she's just shutting him up.
Yeah.
Because she's not ready to break up with him.
Well, she's just using his BS lines against him, isn't she?
Yeah, that too. Like, she wanted to save him, because that was what her heart told her. Later we see her break up with him. But at that time, what can she say? She can't be like, oh, I forgave you, because it's not true. She can't be like, oh, I'm breaking up with you, because she's not ready. She has to say something, so that's there. Use it.
I'm sure she's got a better reason, but he's not worth the time right now, is he?
Yeah. And I think it's the only way she can retain any power in this situation, by using mystery and his own, like, shrugging, oh, well, I know and you don't. The only other option she has, really, is to just, like, fall down and cry. Which is not cool.
Yeah, and she's too strong for that anyway. So, her breakup with him was pretty cool. This is where she basically thanks him for the time that they've had and then says, I'm done, and then walks away.
So good.
Yeah. I just loved it. She is so mature.
I know.
And she's so great, and I think this is the best breakup I've ever seen in anything.
Exactly.
Actually.
Exactly.
How many of these are there in Kamen Rider?
One. So good. It's so good.
Yeah.
I could just chew off my arm in admiration.
It always surprises me when people criticize Kiba's plot, because, I mean, it just has so many unique elements going for it that I think maybe people don't notice.
Mm.
I don't know if it's because they watch... I mean, I'm sure everyone watches the show for different reasons, but...
Yes. Yeah, we should probably move on from that, right?
Well...
They did have kitten heels in the 80s, by the way.
They did, okay. Huh, I did not know that.
I see that.
Oh, never mind.
Let me just sum up that with something like Kamen Rider, with a franchise that's been going so long that it's essentially completely disconnected from what it originally was and everything but a copyrighted trademark, I like to be surprised. So, I like Kiba because it's surprising.
Yeah.
In numerous ways.
I just...
Yeah, it is nice to have the change of pace, because when things get repeated over and over and over again, like the, best guy friend dies, then comes back, or whatever, that started with Double, it's just boring and predictable, and it's no good, so.
That's something that Kiva is so good at, though, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Mixing up the pace.
Uh-huh.
It's like specifically one of its main strengths. Just getting it exactly right, knowing when to pull back and go funny again or go full force and make you cry. It knows exactly what it's doing in terms of pacing.
Yes, and speaking of making cry, I got way emotional in the next couple episodes, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I have that down in my notes.
Little tears on his Google Doc.
Don't give him an electric shock.
I kind of brought this up earlier, but, you know, I want to state more clearly, a watcher's desperation to save Mio is so sad and true, it reminds me of a kid wishing for divorced parents to reunite, but the opposite, of course, because he's trying to stop himself from being born. It made sense when I wrote it.
No, it makes sense. That makes sense.
And, veering to another subject, I'm really back to hating Bishop. He's actively working against these people that I love and trying to hurt them, and Mio is not good for nothing because she rejected his arcane ways. Tiger and Watru could be brothers if Bishop would stop poisoning Tiger.
So you don't like the bad guy, then?
No, but, like, for real good reasons.
That's just normal, though. That's
school.
I don't know.
It's not, though, is it? It's
no,
good writing.
But, well, yeah. Maybe. I don't know. I'd have to think about it for quite a while, but longer than we've got when it comes to Kamen Rider. But, I mean, villains that I've actually hated are probably pretty few and far between. I mean,
Professor Umbridge.
Yes. No, I'm thinking of Kamen Rider, because a hallmark of a Pacer, at least, is misunderstood, you know, misguided villains who just have much power. But Bishop, there will often be like a second in command, like Bishop, I think, who is just bad. I don't know if I resent Bishop as much as you. But I think it's pretty obvious by this point in the series that he is essentially the last bastion of evil. I don't know if he's compelling enough in that role. I like the actor, as I've said a few times. But the actual character's motivation, I think, maybe needed a kickstart by this point.
Well, I'm not sure about that, because I think he's pretty well juxtaposed with King, and Bishop kind of carries on King's hateful, old-school legacy of we must do things this way, because this is how they've been done, without any flexibility.
Yeah.
And... I don't know.
In a kid's show that is based around special effects, alright, let me again, let's get to the armchair. How about this one? How's this one grab you? A bishop carries around a book, right? Or like a book, right? Like a loose leaf book. And he's always referring to it. He's always looking at it. And when he passes his judgments, he reads them from the book. And you have a scene in like episode 41 or something where Tiger strolls past him. He's had enough of his crap for the day and he angrily knocks the book out of Bishop's hand. And you hold the camera on Bishop after Tiger has left the scene, looking at the book on the floor. And like the pages are fluttering out or whatever. And then you never see the book in Bishop's hands after that. All right? There you go. So I'm just going to leave that one with the audience, because that, for me, probably would have kept my eye on Bishop a bit more. I'll admit, I don't think he matters as much towards the end. And he's so obviously Ixa fodder, isn't he, now, at this point? Right? Because you've always got to have, if you have a rival rider, you've got to have, your main one has to kill the bad guy, and then your secondary one has to kill the secondary bad guy. And that is just what Bishop is now. Mm-hmm. But there you go. You know, it's easy to invent little scenes like that that would just flesh your character out a little bit more. Like I say, it's easy to do it from the armchair. But like I said as well, the actor is still fun to watch.
I said while we were watching it, in a decade, they should have got both those guys back, Bishop and Naga. They should have got them back to be alternate version Hopper guys.
Yeah, the Hoppers from Kabuto in Decade.
I don't think you've seen that, but at least one listener will have
seen both of those shows, yeah. Or at least know enough to imagine. Yeah, it could work. Yeah. I would like to see the actor in more stuff. Like I said, if the character was given more unusual things to do later, if he was given more of an overt visual arc and more visual stuff. I mean, well, he gets wacky makeup in the last couple of episodes of the series. Which is fine, you know, and scary, but it's not really what I was looking for, I think.
Alrighty, did you want to make your last comment about Cubot the Second?
I would have thrown me off, because I make it in response to yours, so do you want to make your point? So I can...
I rejiggered my earlier statement, I was just, you know, talking about how easy King is to hate, and Bishop kind of receives that, the brunt of it for me, because he's actively messing with people that I've met, Taiga, Wataru, Mio, and he's doing it in King's stead, so it makes King more easier to hate for me.
No, I think I don't think I do want to say it. You can drop all of that if you like. I don't really know.
I'll do mine if you like.
Please do.
Okay.
I just want to say how great Maya is again. Maya is again. Because she's just so self-possessed still. Yeah. She treats Yuri like a sweet baby, which is so cute. She curls her lips at her like, are you trying hard? But she's not malicious or anything. She just thinks she's so cute.
She's fascinated by them humans, isn't she?
And the way she just slays King with her perfectly understated, he's all, do you love a toy then? And she's like, I suppose so. And then she just looks at him so calmly and says, more than anyone else.
Yeah.
But she doesn't even put in as much emphasis as I did then. It's amazing.
Like anybody else, and including me?
It just cuts him in half. And she knows it, but she doesn't have to do any fancy. She doesn't need swords or whatever. It's amazing. It's so good. And I also love the contrast between Tiger and Mio's ceremony from the last episode. Contrast that with Otoya saying to Maya, do you have the resolve to live with me? And she's like, I do. And it's just so simple and so not extravagant, but they mean it.
That's what you got. That's the conversation you got to have when you move in with someone.
Yeah, that's that. That is 100%. Are you committed to me?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Whereas Tiger and Mio were like, "Can you save me?"
Yeah.
No, can't. Sorry.
Yeah, grow up.
It's a nice subtle thing.
That reminds me of a line in a song, if you're lucky to be one of the few to find somebody who can tolerate you, etc., etc. And I really love that because to some extent that's kind of what it is.
Yeah.
But like in a totally romantic way, right?
I also think it's quite interesting that do you have the resolve? It is quite an unromantic sentence. It could mean anything. Like, he's not saying, I want to give up all of my philandering and love only you. He might be saying, do you want to be my forever girl? And also, I'll keep being me. It doesn't specify whether he's saying that or whether he's saying, I want only you now. It could be either, and she's still up for it.
You could also interpret it as, are you prepared to live with me? So, you can draw a lot of the same conclusions from that.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Do be aware of subtitlers and all that.
It doesn't, business. It doesn't pander to the audience. It doesn't give you, this is now going to be their perfect life. Yeah. It leaves questions, which, I mean, there are really in a commitment. Like, will someone mess it up? Maybe. But are you going to do it anyway? Yes. So they're a nice lesson, I guess, for little 8-year-olds.
Well, if not to them, then to who?
Yeah. Yeah. But I also, I'm just so appalled by King's, even in this episode, before we find out what he says.
We've covered his clothes already.
Disgusting use of Tiger against Maya. That is appalling. Yeah.
Well.
He doesn't care about that baby. He's just like, you leave me? Well, then I'm taking the baby. What are you going to do?
Okay, I don't want to be the one to, like, try and make out that King is a sympathetic character. But he could have been bluffing.
Well, he could have been, but he's still using it against her, and that's atrocious.
I know it is, but I, for some reason, I feel like he was bluffing. Because he's a pragmatist. And I don't think he wanted to tell you that at that point. You know, until he says, literally, I don't need a traitor's blood.
I think that she would know if he were bluffing.
Well, yeah, maybe.
And she didn't think that he was.
They don't know each other that well, do they, clearly?
She seems to know him quite well.
Okay.
I think she's more perceptive than he is.
She knows him well enough to bait him pretty effectively.
I don't think we're going to see any baby killing in Kamen Rider, though. So I think everything will be okay.
It's just an impressively low to take your villain to.
Yeah, but he, I don't know, doesn't he kind of scream it anyway?
Yeah.
With all our complaints about him,
It's true.
Well, look at him, he's a jerk.
But that's basically, like, within the law, even assuming he's not going to kill the baby, he's just like, I've got it, and if you want to see it again, you'll do what I say. Within the law, that's like the worst thing someone can do.
Yeah.
Because a father can get custody of a child over a mother. It's not incredibly hard. Mm. And that's, if you're not doing it, if you're doing it to control someone, that's the worst. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, yeah, I'm going to do it. I don't care. So he's probably the most villainous villain in all of Kamen Rider, in my opinion. Because he's both large-scale murder evil,
mm-hmm.
and small-scale, extremely personal, domestic evil.
Yeah, the leader of Shaka never, reads out someone's diary in public.
Right.
Or, like, posts nudes of them on Facebook. You know?
Yeah.
It's petty evil.
Yeah.
But very personal evil.
But I think that's good to show a villain doing, because often a main character or a good character will do something petty and then it's forgiven later, so it doesn't have the same level of you really shouldn't do this stuff. Whereas if you put that kind of mean-spirited, everyday, possible evil on a real villainous villain, it makes it a little more obvious that you definitely shouldn't do that.
Right.
Well, listener, what Rider villains do you think are equally cruel?
Yeah, who is the meanest?
Not necessarily, I'm going to blow up the world, or I'm going to turn everybody into mummies. Just a little mean thing.
We're like not looking for Sephiroth.
Baby.
We're looking for Umbridge.
Well, I only have very vague memories of Final Fantasy VII.
I never played it.
But I believe that... Wait.
All I know from
He wants a meteor to crash into the planet.
But isn't it because everyone's, like, all sad?
Yeah, exactly. So it's got...
So that's not mean so much as it is really bad at being nice.
Yeah, he's... Well, yeah, he's one of them, isn't he?
Yeah.
I'm saving the world by killing everybody.
Willow.
Hello, 1998. How are you?
Not so good. I don't think it's very reasonable for Wataru to try and negate his own existence. I think.
Well, yeah.
I think he needs a wonderful life intervention.
He's almost regressing, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, beyond regression, really.
Yeah, because because he hasn't been born yet.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is more like the old Wataru. I mean, what a stupid... Are you actually going to go through with it?
Yeah, actually, it's funny because he's too late.
Yeah.
Because there's not really time after he leaves for them to become intimate. So yeah. They must have already.
Yeah. He hasn't been studying his time
travel. Sorry, chap.
Well, it's convenient, isn't it? The time door always seems to send people back the same amount of time.
That's true.
He's gone back in time later in the series, and he's appeared later in the 80s.
What a very specific time
zone. It is very specific. It sends people back 22 years. Like, amazing coincidence.
Very useful.
Mm. Let's read Amit's notes for him.
Okay,
he says, I like that Kibat the Second is on Maya's side. That's so neat. But it is a bit strange that he's still helping King. He probably has to, until Atoya had asked for his power, that is. I don't know if Kibat the Second is on Maya's side. You?
Well, he says...
I think he's on the side of his job, whatever that is.
In the fight, he's on their side.
He says he's an ally.
In the domestic disagreement.
Yeah, in that one brief moment, he says, I'm your ally. I always thought it was a shame we didn't learn more about the actual history and relationship between Vanguard and Kibats. Like, they're obviously very... They've obviously got a kind of symbiotic thing going on. Like, the Kibats are some kind of servant class.
I think that would have to be a supplementary manga or something.
Yeah, unfortunately. It should have, you could... They could have worked that in. That could have been the movie. Like, that's the kind of thing I'd like to see in the movie. Not flipping random, bringing up always Satan.
No, you're right.
So you wanted that to replace the movie? You don't want a new Kiba Returns movie?
No, I would have liked to have seen... The Kiba movie actually delve into the history of the 13 demon tribes. Show them all. I mean, it reveals two new ones, one of which is a mess, and the other one of which you'd be forgiven for not even noticing, because it's only mentioned in supplemental material. It's only mentioned in some TV magazine thing that Ray is based on one of the 13 tribes. So, yeah, bollocks. I envision the Kibats as kind of, they have a certain degree of influence because for whatever reason they can bestow this cool suit on whoever is in charge of the Fanguys at any one time.
Armor. It's the king's armor, okay?
Yeah, I don't like saying armor. I don't know why. I have to go and think about that. I don't like calling it armor. I noticed in your notes sometimes you used the term knights. And I don't know if it's a British thing, but I don't like using that word in this context.
Yeah, it was very funny. The other... Where was I?
You know Elton John is a knight, right?
Yes.
Okay. And he's a cool guy, but knights are real.
Yeah, they are.
No, I know. It's more illusory my note-taking,
yeah.
I think of them as knights, they are factually knights. But, I mean, what if Fangire knights wear that kind of arm? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course. I mean, so I don't know. They're almost like the drug dealers to the culture, in that the Fangires believe they need this stuff. Do they? I don't know. I mean, is Kiba that great? I guess it is, I guess.
Just culture and politics.
Always win. Yeah. I need to go back and read, actually, some of that material I found that's all flipping. Mentions that Saga was like the prototype for Kiba or something like that. It was like the first suit worn by the king or something.
Yeah, please share, because like even the 13 demon tribe information, like that's not in the show at all. Like I barely
they mention it once. They use the phrase Jusan Mazoku like once in the whole series. But yeah, well they're not all listed, but basically you can fill them in using like, because the Dran is one of them. There's like a Dran tribe.
Oh boy.
Yeah,
okay.
There's like a whole bunch of those.
Are they all various forms of reptile with some sort of house. Domicile on them, or they're all dragons?
No, well, I don't know. Yeah, they could be like an iguana bungalow. Could be like a alligator caravan. I don't know. These sound like really late Beast Wars toys, and they were running out of ideas.
That's funny.
I've got the one that turns into a half baboon, half tiger somewhere. He's brilliant. Anyway.
Oh wow.
His ass shoots off for some reason. He's got a little button pressed in his ass.
Why wouldn't?
I don't know if mine's broken. Anyway, but yeah, I like the relationship, and I like that Kibat II can almost pick and choose who he sides with. And I know we haven't really got there yet, but King is kind of helpless. Well, like, what are you going to do? I mean, I am your status, and I've decided to leave you. I've made an executive decision to lend my power to someone else.
I almost like that as a metaphor, I guess would be the proper word, a symbol of the fact that he's such a jerk that he's like lost his rank and station because of the way he behaves, he's losing his agency, I guess you could say, or what separated him from other people. Mm-hmm. And that might be because I see I'll probably get crap from you guys on this. But I see, like, nobility and station and wealth and things like that as more of an obligation to other people than as a privilege you get to lord over others.
Well,
I mean, I think that's the appropriate way to
don't know if you get crap,
frame it.
I agree with you, so I'm not sure if that counts as crap. But yeah, noblesse oblige.
Well, no, you're supposed to say, like, oh, well, you know, we're British and there used to be the monarch and now we don't like the queen because she's stupid. And
yes. I certainly wish the Queen would declare war on America.
I bet you do.
Okay, the I'm sorry, I've got a tangent here, but there'll be someone out there who'll appreciate this. Maybe you two will. Edit it out if you like. But Kibat II leaving King like that. That idea of like not realizing how useful your little like magic slave is until they betray you. I like that, and it reminded me of a dream I had once where I was playing Zelda, like, and it was like a mix of Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. It like wasn't really either of them, but it was like somewhere in the middle. And the fairy, you know, you got like the fairy that helps you lock onto stuff.
Right.
It was purple, so it definitely wasn't one of the ones from those games. And there's a boss in my dream where the fairy, for whatever story reason, and you know, like you've got text boxes at the bottom, but it's all gibberish in my dream. Like complete gibberish. You remember it when you wake up and you're like, what does that mean? The fairy leaves you and joins the boss. So just for that one fight, and you reconcile after, I guess. But for that fight, you can't use the targeting, so you have to do everything manually. And the boss can lock onto you, and you like see the lock-on graphic on Link. And I thought that was a really cool idea for a boss. And also, it made me really mad, because I was like, oh god, I will never yell at the fairy again for going, hey, listen. Taught me a new appreciation for my little fairy friend. There you go. There's a little story for you.
Well, I'm definitely leaving that in.
Yeah, but I don't think King don't care. King's just offended. He takes these things so personally, and he won't even like come close to an apology or reconciliation. And that's what happens. You drive people away by behaving like this. People
you know,
and bats.
He's bought his own hype, and he can't. He can't forgive. For leaving him because he can't fathom that might be the right idea.
Yeah. He was raised wrong.
He was.
But I don't want to risk sympathising with him because I bet some people are like, oh man, it's so sad when he, you know, when Maya leaves him.
No.
And he's so hurt and upset by it. It's like, nah, he's just bad.
He's a horrid man.
Yeah.
He's so horrid, even the fan guys don't really want him.
No, they don't.
Just a little flash forward. I'm worried about that kind of happening with Wataru, because based on the preview, because he's in his clothes at the end of in 47 at some point. So that's really terrifying. That's part of the reason I've held off on watching those episodes. I need to be in the right state before I
Dive in. When Wataru does spoilers, well, you've seen it in the preview, and anyone listening to this will have either seen it in the preview or seen the episode in question. And you see Wataru on the throne. Yeah, he chooses. What is he, 22? This young man.
21.
All right, he chooses to wear those clothes.
Yeah.
And that, I don't know, if I can like him anymore.
I think he's trying to project his
sentence. He is, he's having fun. But, that's strange, isn't it? It's very strange seeing him in those clothes.
Yeah.
But we'll get there, don't you worry.
Yeah. And to bring us properly into 45, and then so I can say all my stuff about it. 45, King's rage burns as he tries to kill the Kurunais in his Bat Fangire form. Toyo continues to put his life at risk to defeat King and protect the woman he loves and his sons. I thought it was really impressive that Wataru, and maybe I'm not giving him enough credit, but I thought it was pretty impressive that Wataru went ahead and saved Atoya when King said, hey, if you want to stop things from sucking for you, go ahead and just kill Atoya, and it'll all be over. And of course, he didn't.
What were you expecting to be like? Well, I know he dies anyway, may as well be me.
not quite that, but I thought he would have been tempted, but he totally wasn't, so that made me happy to see.
You say protect the woman he loves and his sons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because Otoya tells Maya that...
Best moment.
Yeah, that that Taiga is his son.
He says...
Oh, I forgot.
Maya's child is my child.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, but they're literally hers, though.
They're literally his.
Wow.
Don't be pissing on adoption.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm...
But there was no certificate signed there.
There was because
that's
heart,
what matters.
They just made the thing, and then they made that thing too.
Do you think that's his best line, then?
I truly, truly do. I think that's his absolute best quality, and the best anything about him at all. That's like his one redeeming point, in my opinion.
Todd, do you think it was the father son bathing, or maybe him spanking Wataru? That was his best moment.
By this point, I am kind of waiting for Atoya to die in the nicest possible way.
Right.
In like a plot convenience way more than anything. I don't hate the guy, I just... It's like with Mio, it's like, yeah, I get it, let's get on with the story. Which I'm sorry, that sounds really heartless. It's a bit late for spanking, I think.
Well,
not when you have a free... fancy heart like
Kunoi
Otoya.
I don't think Watcher is the kind of kid that would respond to spanking.
He's an adult now.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't think he would have been, though. I don't think I think Otoya was on the wrong track there.
Like he died then, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, and then, this episode, King actually threatens to kill Taiga. And, you know, it cemented him as a bastard to me. I mean, he was bad before, trying to be like the Troll King from Ozma of Oz, you know, making bric-a-brac out of the Endlings. But, like, this really just put him over, well, I don't know, over, under, whatever. It pushed him across the threshold that he had to die. So.
Well, it places him very clearly in direct opposition to Otoya, because Otoya's just said, my child is my child, and now King's like, my biological child, I'll kill it. Previously, it's they've been enemies just like accidentally, really, but now they are specifically placed as opposing opposites, you know?
Yeah.
Like now they mirror each other instead of just both happening to have the same girl. There's some really good physical acting again. When Maya comes to the bottom of the steps that he's struggling down after using Darkkeeper for the first time, They just fall into a hug, and it's like, it looks right. Like, it looks homecoming-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't think is... I think it's probably not that easy to just create that effect. I think that must be good physical acting to create such a specific, strong atmosphere just in one movement.
This is not related to physical acting at all, because it's Kivat the Second, but I thought it was so cool that he expresses to Maya that he's on her side, and that, you know, by his actions he obviously gave himself or lent Otoya his power, and I just think it's so cool. You guys touched on it earlier, but I just wanted to explicitly state that I really enjoy that aspect, that he has this free will and he can do, you know, as he pleases.
Whose side is he on?
No one. He's just a
not
guy.
Yours. Yeah, I guess.
Let's see. The struggle between Otoya and Watru is so interesting. I think they're about equal as men at this point, with Otoya willing to risk his life to save Taiga. Otoya's thing about, like, no, don't go with me, I want to, you know, handle things on my own, seems more self-sacrificing than proud and, I don't know, haughty, which is just pride in it, just a synonym for pride.
Mm.
So I really appreciate that in him.
I'm not sure about that.
Because
I'm not entirely sure what it's for. I don't know that he's doing it really for anything beyond the concept of nobility and self-sacrifice. The first time I watched it, I did like it, and I thought that is a good point for him. Like, that's balancing off all of the ways I haven't liked him. But this time around, less so. Like, when he says to Maya, won't you accept my life? Are you so weak that you won't even accept that I'm going to go and die? On the one hand, I didn't like that scene so much the second time because she accepts it meekly.
Yeah.
She should not accept that meekly. I don't know why you would suddenly make this character meek. It seemed very traditional, I suppose. And I don't think they've had a traditional dynamic. I think that was a poor choice. It seemed almost like fetishized, the idea of, oh, I'm going to go and die. And she's like, oh, I accept it then.
Yeah.
Like, why, though? And that seems like it's just recreating the cycle of high tragedy without any real need for it.
It's all a bit selfish.
That why can't Wataru take Dark Kiva? He's like, you can't take away my choice, I'm going to do it. Why, though? You just want to die because you know you're a turd. You don't have the resolve to live.
Mm.
With Maya or with yourself. That's you, and you're making the choice to leave her and leave your children. And you know that they need you. I don't think I'm so much down with that this time. I think that he's doing his selfish thing again.
I think you may be right, but it really felt so noble to me and, like, good. And maybe upon another viewing, I would be able to see it as you do.
Mm. I didn't feel that way the first time. I was pretty much with you on the first viewing, I think.
Okay. But my one observation I made was that in all his nobility, he was really, being Mr. Grand Gesture. So if there was any doubt that that's kind of what he's about, maybe his needless high tragedy thing was just because he wanted to put on a show or, I don't know, like dazzle Maya and everybody else with how noble he was acting.
Yeah.
So it could have been a little bit of his... I don't know, whimsical farce.
I think it's probably mixed up in how he's been portrayed as an extremely short-term character. He doesn't think long-term. He's shown not to consider how this will impact that and how this relationship will be affected by this new interest. He's a guy who's just now. What will be really cool right now? I'll do that. And I'm not sure that he even really engages with the idea of death. Like, he seems to, but you can talk about death, but not actually think about death. People do that all the time.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. Sorry. A weak segue off of death. I was really, really upset to find out that Bishop executed Mio.
I wasn't, because it means she survived Kiva's finisher with barely a scratch.
Yeah, badass.
Yeah, I guess, but then this chump just slides over and, you know, dusts her or whatever.
Checkmate 4 power levels are very inconsistent.
Yeah, no,
well, I mean, let's
that.
Be real, she wasn't exactly holding on to life, was she?
Mm.
Like Kutoya, no. she burned brightly and faded away.
Yeah.
She wasn't exactly someone who...
I mean, you can pull anything
thought,
out.
Yeah, I'll have a great life long term.
She survived Kiva's finisher, but like there was just enough health left in her gauge that it would be removed by Bishop's finisher. Or maybe Bishop's finisher, like, is more powerful based on your vertical stance, and if you're lying down, it hurts more. Who knows?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
But,
I mean, the technicalities of, you know, how she was killed by him and not by Watcher don't matter. It's just, it makes me mad that the bastard took the opportunity to go ahead and kill her. I mean, once again, he's, you know, messing with these people that I care about,
though,
that have come to care about watching the show.
I know this may only apply, well, this may only apply to Claire, but does Watcher find out that he didn't kill Mio?
No.
That's funny. Isn't it?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Like, because
yeah.
It's obviously partly done to absolve him of this accidental murder, but as far as he's concerned...
He doesn't know. He's living with having murdered his girlfriend.
Yeah. One day he'll find out he didn't.
Which is...
When her parents come looking for
not
her body.
Not really that good. Because you don't really want to watch a show about a murderer.
No, not
who's
really.
Who's getting on with it anyway.
Yeah.
If you murder your girlfriend, you should probably, like, be in jail.
Yeah. I mean, there are plenty of writer shows where that sort of thing is much more problematic because there's not as much else to balance it out. But in Kiva, I do let it slide a little because there's so much other stuff going on.
Yeah.
And it's easy to believe that nobody saw that exchange. That fight took place on a cliff somewhere, didn't it?
Well,
I don't know.
Well, Bishop told Taiga, and then Taiga tried to. Oh, you mean just like in general,
yeah,
him killing her? Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's
I don't think
news.
Anybody knew.
It's not like in some writer series where most of the action takes place in a metropolitan city area, where you know it's pretty hard to excuse this sort of thing.
Mm. Right.
But yeah, Bishop, of course. You know, he tells Tiger, and then Tiger being this big businessman, I mean, who knows what he can cover up, huh?
That's true.
Who knows how much stroke he's got?
Mm. Connections, thought of.
Yeah.
Family, gold.
Exactly.
Whatever vampires have. Otoya, to be fair, does have another, he has a moment of all right parenting.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Being nice to him today. I'm still not, I'm afraid.
Well, I'm not being nice. I've said a lot of things about how I think he's not all that. Okay. But when they're in the castle together, crouched down, before Mio does her Princess Leia bit, Otoya says to Watcher something like, do you still think it's okay for you to disappear or something? Like, do you still think that it's reasonable to ask to negate your own life? Which, is he saying that in terms of, look what I'm doing, aren't you grateful? Because he is sacrificing his life for his sons and for future of Kiva and for the future of vampire relations and all that jazz. I do think it's quite good advice, but I don't know exactly what it means in context. Because I can't tell if it means, I can't tell if he's telling him off for being ungrateful, or if he is doing the, but people care for you thing.
Yeah, I liked it, or I like it either way.
Yeah.
I read it more ambivalently, I guess. And yeah, I do agree that was a pretty cool moment for him. I mean, I think he gets an even better one though, being, you know, a better parenting moment in the next episode. Let's get to that, sort of quickly. A little, like, direction thing that I thought was cool, almost a gag, was, Otoya waking up in that gazebo with Yuri there a few times.
Watcher,
yeah. It just made me laugh because it made me think about Back to the Future.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I did think it was a little bit silly that Yuri was wearing the same outfit both times. That just seems like a mistake.
Yeah.
Oh. I wonder if that was just like, hey, we're running out of time, let's get this these shots done really quickly.
That's what I figured.
It could be. But yeah, I mean, it was a cute little thing, and I know, like, she's not his mother, but she kind of feels close enough, because, I mean, she could have been his stepmom. It's there, to me.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, I think it was the second time, her little lesson to him was really cool, really beautiful. As soon as she started talking to him about, you know, everything that was going on, I could see where it was going, and, like you guys have said before, you know, the show makes you feel smart or clever.
Yeah.
And I thought it was awesome that she brought up, like, look, you know, Mio had her life and her love with you, and, like, her experiences up until the point she died, I'm sure, were, like, she could have valued them just like I, you know, I'm done with Otoya, but I appreciate what we had together for when we did.
Yeah. Which a lot of dead characters in Kamen Rider don't get that kind of life validation. Like a wake, essentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, in Blade, Tachibana's girlfriend pops her clogs.
Yeah.
No one's like, but let's talk about how good it was that she lived. They're just like, yeah, she's dead. Mm-hmm. Sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
You'll get better. There's not that moment of pause to consider the fact that she was alive. It's just now she's become the dead person, which is not the same for me. It's more she was an alive person.
Yeah.
Which is a fine line, but an important one.
Okay, time for a negative comment. The dropped Ixa Bishop fight is really weird. I think that this was probably the sloppiest bit of timeline juggling we've seen. For how long... It begs the question for how long has Bishop been trying to gather all these souls, and it's just really difficult to tell.
He's a collector.
Okay.
Yeah, not sure about this one.
I don't really remember what you're
referring to. I don't recall this at all. Well, I mean, I know he's collecting souls to try and revive the king.
But the particular scene, I think.
No, I don't.
Yeah, it's like a real weird scene where there are people running from him in the street, and he's got a crystal ball, and like...
Yeah.
Stuff's flowing into it or out of it, and it was really weird. So, didn't like it, didn't make sense. Poor directing, poor pacing.
Oh, dear.
And then, well, like, especially because Nagu comes up to him, and then there's never a conclusion to their fight, not even a, like, you know, explosion, then one of them disappears.
You know how it goes.
I guess, but I expect more from Kiva, so I have to complain about that. A little more about Otoya and fatherhood. The father he never got to be isn't made up for by his nobility and sacrifice in helping Wataru move on and saving Taiga, but it almost feels like it here. And I wonder if Wataru feels that way at all.
I doubt that Wataru blames Otoya in any way for anything.
Yeah, he's come close to scolding him a couple of times, though, hasn't he?
Has he?
Yeah, I think so. Can't give you a specific example. But
they're not in, life choice ways.
Maybe not.
He doesn't, he clearly knows that his dad's got two girlfriends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's not like, Daddy, you are naughty.
Yeah.
He's just like, come on, Yuri, you can do it. Because I don't want to be born. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that he regards his father as someone who should be corrected. I mean, early on, there were the bits where he was like, my dad was the best ever, and then, oh no, he was really mean and ruined people's lives through gambling. He's so terrible. And I think it plateaued basically at, well, he's dead, so can't change it. Even though he thinks he can change it, he knows that he can't. So I don't really think that he thinks of him in judgmental terms at all. He's just cast in amber, really.
You could be right about that. Did you guys notice the lines on Otoya's face when he got bitten by Kivat being particularly like aggressive or different looking?
No, that's interesting.
I didn't actively notice, but I felt a change.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, maybe, I mean, I haven't done screen cap comparisons or anything, so I could be off, but I'm pretty sure they're more aggressive, and I like that touch if it means, or if it's to intimate that, you know, Kivat's power is killing him.
Yeah.
And then, last thing for this episode, I was really surprised that that Batu made his CGI return, and I'm glad that it went away quickly. And that we still had the King Otoya fight to finish things off for that episode. So
I think most of us had forgotten that he could do this.
What?
Turn into a bat or raven or something.
Oh, I quite like that.
He called him Bataru.
I know. I just thought he was talking about someone who I didn't remember.
Right.
No, I liked it.
I didn't dislike it.
Because it's so extreme at this point. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, just whatever. Throw up the horns.
Yeah.
Get it all in.
Why Guashiru suddenly got three heads, shooting lasers, magic roundabout theme starts playing. People, townsfolk run in and they're all dressed like cavemen.
Yeah, I do think beams. It helps with the...
Whatever.
With the feeling of series climax. Just throw everything in that we've already had. Don't leave anything out.
Oh, yeah, cool. Sure.
Yeah, I guess. It's still goofy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It is. It is goofy.
I've never appreciated Batur, so. Except for the name. I love the name, but I feel bad about that, because you're not supposed to, like, actively love things that you make up. Well, anyway.
I know that one.
I guess except for your offspring. Sorry, couldn't help myself. So let's go ahead and get started on episode 46.
Let's get finished on episode 46, the final episode for the episode. Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. By the way, are you glad that I didn't bring up the lines on Otoya's face looking like the double lines?
Yeah,
you ruined it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's where they got it from. Here in the future.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Let's see. Episode 46, Otoya and Wataru defeat King. Otoya says goodbye to those he loves, and Wataru walks his own path, dealing with invading Fengar, Mio's death, and Taiga's unacceptable wishes for their relationship. It's funny to me that using Kivat's power is going to, or using Dark Kiva as a human, a mere human, is going to kill Otoya, but the guy just won't quit. I think he transforms like four times, maybe, and he turns into Ixa as well, which I don't remember if they actually ironed out the kinks of that hurting you, or if he just got used to it or what. But
well, at that point, it's not going to make too much difference, is it?
I remember this guy wondering early on, like, oh, what is Otoya? Is he some kind of creature?
Mm.
Well, okay, so...
Just incredibly full of himself.
He is just a guy, yeah, but for some reason, he obviously writes the script himself.
Well, yeah,
King
apparently.
Says, later again, I'm always jumping ahead, King exclaims as this battle wears on, that Otoya has terrifying life force, which is interesting, I thought.
Ego to the point of magic.
He's just a really confident human, It's as simple as that.
He's a genius who only comes along once every 1,000 years or so. Come on.
Perhaps he has a very fast metabolism.
It's teaching children that arrogance is strength. There you go. Good lesson.
Yeah, that's not good. Oh, well. But, like, cool things come out of that. Like, his little line about men fight to protect those they value. I really appreciate that.
Well, I don't.
Oh, because, well, because women should just smile. That's what he said. Yeah, as I said before, I'm still not sold on this guy.
Can I have a go?
He's sold on it.
Apparently not.
He's served his purpose, but I'm not convinced by this man.
You can say whatever you want. I'm not the one stopping you.
He is.
Oh, I understand.
If men fight to protect those they value, then what's
I think
smiling,
I...
he says in later episodes.
Does he?
Yeah, he says a smile suits Yuri best.
Oh, yeah.
I.e. better than fighting. Yeah, it's kind of bullshit. Pillock. Yeah.
I didn't read it as better than fighting. I just thought it was more... Oh my god, I just read one of your comments. I read it more as like, hey, don't be sad, you should be happy, and like...
Yeah.
Get over me.
I guess. But yeah, I don't know. Men fight to protect their belly, whatever.
Well,
people
I mean,
should fight.
Yeah, once again, I read it more kindly as, you know, people should. But I know he's probably sexist, but I can't, I don't take it that way,
he's
you know.
He's just very old-fashioned, as is Kamen Rider. Let's face it, this is not a very progressive television show. So I can accept that.
All right. Well, please excuse my sexism or my, you know, apparent sexism, and we'll move on from there. So father and son fighting shoulder to shoulder in their knightly armor is so awesome. I only wish
that did not sound like that many O's to me. Do it again, please.
Father and son fighting shoulder to shoulder in their knightly armor is so awesome. I only wish to see the brothers unite now, and all my silly fan dreams for this show and Black will be realized.
You know, I hung out with my brother at the weekend.
Yeah.
And whenever two English brothers get together, they wear armor. They don their knightly gear.
Yeah.
Stand back to back. They henshin at the same time, and they agree to disagree. Though our paths may be different, our goal is the same.
We barely disagreed at all this weekend.
We barely disagree ever, really. I'm usually just defending other people from him, from his disagreements.
Yeah.
But that's a little bit too much of my personal life for a Kamen Rider podcast.
I'll cut that out, don't worry.
No, don't. It's fine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no,
I will leave it in then.
Okay. Or do you really want to see Black and Shadow Moon? Like, would you have liked to have seen that in that series?
I don't know. I just...
don't want to change it too much, I guess, but...
It just makes me so sad, because, like, they were... I mean, they grew up together, they loved each other, and then he gets, you know, brainwashed, and... But then he kind of... I mean, you haven't seen it, so he has some moments of lucidity, I want to call it, right. And it just... I wish for more, but whatever. Right. You were totally right that this show was going to... Not Eclipse, but definitely be right up there on the shelf in my heart, top shelf, right next to Black. So, I'm a little worried about what's going to happen. You mentioned Taiga getting killed by Wachu, and I don't know if you were saying hypothetically or what, but I really don't want to see that happen. So, I'm actually, I need to move on. I can't talk about that anymore. I don't want to think about it. So I'm going to talk about King and how much of a chump he is.
A huge chump.
Yeah, his last words are petty, divisive, and a mark of his wrong-headed, shallow narcissism. A king's legacy is the malicious contempt for others that keep the world embroiled in conflict and strife.
Yeah, basically.
And, yeah.
It's, even the second time around, the tiny part of me thought, okay, he's saying Maya, he's going to admit maybe he loved her a tiny bit. No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Even his latent feelings for his son comes out in the form of, he will grow up to be a horrible murderer. So I win.
Yeah.
What an idiot. Just terrible.
Terrible. For sure.
Yeah, but it was really funny to me that it turns out that, you know, the son who he wants to... kill everybody, ends up killing him by defending, you know, his mommy who he loves.
Yeah, with his shield that he never uses again.
Yeah, but it's his baby shield.
Yeah, babies are different.
Yeah.
It's like his egg tea.
I think I'd like to coin baby love shield. It's his baby love shield. Sorry.
That means something else in England.
I don't care if your baby makes a shield. Just don't tattoo your baby. That's all I'm saying. It's really weird. I don't know why, but it was really funny to me to see his baby with a little tattoo on his hand.
It's magic.
Stained glass face. It's just so funny.
It was funny. This tiny little baby hand.
Yeah.
Like, it's supposed to be a symbol of power, and oh no, but it's not a fat little baby hand.
Silly fat baby hand, but I hope he is. I don't know, I hope that tattoo doesn't look weird, and well, it does once he's grown up, you know, it's obviously kept its shape, but don't give your babies tattoos, please.
Yeah, but it was cute.
I'm just not a fan of babies.
Wow, yeah. Okay. Moving on. Otoyo's fronting, this is, I think, his best parenting moment, maybe. Otoyo's fronting to Otoyo that he is fine feels like a kindness meant to help encourage him to live life like Otoyo did, boldly, honestly, and as he saw fit. There's a danger, of course, in this message, but the nobility with which Otoyo acted at the end and the heart Watru has shown throughout the series mitigates this somewhat, I think.
I don't like to say it often, but that is totally a Japanese fiction thing. I don't like it.
Which part specifically?
Just the idea of hiding your pain for the sake of those around you, and then as soon as they're gone, being like, "Oh, that's smart. Give me sympathy." I don't like it. It's a really unhealthy mindset, in my opinion.
Mm.
That's just me. I think you should be honest. Say, "I'm dying, and this is what you need to do next."
At least he didn't tell him to never stop smiling.
Yeah, for sure.
That's a mercy.
It is. Yeah.
That's my least favorite one.
Not a good one.
I think
that's one for the ladies, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
always smile. I'm dying.
I think it was at least. I think that was an example of Otoyo's bluffing as probably working out for the best. Probably the only one in the series. But how is he, like, 22?
Otoyo, yeah.
24? Is he
24? 22.
Okay, well, either way, he does not know how to be a dad to a 21-year-old.
No.
Especially 21 years worth of parenting, which is what Watcher is begging for, basically.
Watcher is 20.
Yeah, the start, right?
Oh, has he had a birthday, I guess.
He must have.
Okay.
Fine. Yeah, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Happy birthday to me. Oh, wait, no. Was that his?
Oh, no,
maybe that was her first heartbreak cake.
Yeah. Well, anyway, he must have had a birthday because it's been a year.
There you go. Otoyo is 23 in 86.
Because Otoyo basically doesn't tell him anything useful, but it sounds useful-ish. It sounds like he does know, and I think that more than some actual useful advice, which there isn't really any of for someone in Washeru's position, other than just keep going, the illusion of a father who knows best is probably quite helpful for him. Right. I think it's like it's
he's never had one.
Exactly. It's a generous security blanket to give to him.
Okay.
In this one, that, like, the specifics of the characters are the only thing that make it work for me, really, because usually I'm not keen on that whole deal either. But I think that giving him the impression that some people know what they're doing is decent enough, I think.
Okay.
Well, and then he tells him to do his own thing.
Yeah, exactly. So if I can create mine, then you can create yours. Like, it's aspirational, isn't it?
Yeah, even though you killed your girlfriend.
Yeah.
I
guess Otoyo just doesn't worry about that too much. Not shocked. I'm about to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. As much as, I don't know, I've grown to like him and want to kind of defend him, which I think I have the, you know, dead person nostalgia going on for me right now. No, really, because like when everybody
no,
dies,
I,
oh, he
I
was
love
such
that.
A,
I love that.
He was such a great father and husband. It's like, no, he was an a-hole. He beat us and, you know, was a jerk to to mom. But like, yeah, he was so great. I was at a funeral recently, like a couple weeks ago, and this guy, the priest, was talking about whatever, and I was like, you didn't even know the lady. Come on, you can't say that. Like, that's such BS that we put up with all that farce for the dead. Anyway, can I just anyway that comment away and move on?
Of course.
Sure.
You're the boss. You do whatever you want. You can tell us to come on this show with hats on if you want. Do you want us to wear hats? We'll wear hats.
I've got plenty.
Yeah.
I'll have to remember that next time. Well, you are British, so I'm sure you'd make a trip to the haberdashery every day, right?
I've got a Terry Bogard hat, King of Fighters hat, so I'll wear that if you want.
Technically, I have it, but you may borrow it.
It's right there. It's mine.
It's mine.
It's mine.
It's mine.
It's mine.
I bought it.
Hey, come on, come on. Okay, let's move on.
Okay. So quickly, the gag with Nago's letter recommendation to Yuri is so classic. I think they're a great comedic duo.
Aren't they?
And,
yeah.
So cute.
I wonder if... nothing's going to happen there. Nothing's going to happen there.
All right. Let's see. Who are you? Oh, never mind. I won't mention ghosts. Just move on. Let's see. Watu's return to the past and his, dare I say... regal glare that sends Fangire running is so bittersweet. What?
You're referring to Red Steel.
Yeah, that's what I'm referring to.
I really like that. Yeah. It's so funny.
I've got a lot to say about this. This helped a lot for me.
Okay.
Yeah, well, it helped the series a lot. Although I do love Kiva. You know, it has its downsides, and this helped make up for a lot of them.
Okay, well, after I finish my point, you can fill me in on what your thoughts are. After seeing him defeat King in the past, it is very cool to me that he is so powerful now, but it worries me that the Fangire are so responsive to him. This plus Bishop's desire to crown someone else's king makes me wonder if Wataru is somehow susceptible to some Fangire magic or something like that, especially because, you know, we already spoiled or talked about in the preview he's wearing the, King outfit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, carry on, you know.
Okay. Yeah, sorry, I'll finish that second point. Your audio dropped really low, so did you want me to finish my next point and then you'll respond?
Please do.
Okay. All of Watcher's smiling and lightheartedness are nice to see, but it's undercut by the feeling of dread or impending doom when juxtaposed to him staring down Fangire.
You're worried here, aren't you, about where he's going to go?
Yes, of course I am.
I never interpreted it that way. On both viewings, I got that we were meant to see how Watcher had finally gained strength and confidence, but retained his initial kindness. As I rewatched it this time, I did think, when he turns to smile at Shizuka, I thought, you know, someone could interpret that as, like, creepy fake smile, because although we've praised the actor before, you know, he probably could do scary if he wanted to.
Yeah.
Because he does have quite weird eyebrows.
He does, doesn't he?
He has eyebrows like my face on a Tuesday morning. Which is, I don't know, that's not an eyebrow, that's not the texture in eyebrows, they look quite rough. but no, I loved it, because the last thing you want is for Watcher to be like, I am mean and serious now. But the idea that he can do it and then still be himself, because as we were saying, this series is about self-actualization. So he's not trying to be anyone else. He's not suddenly, I am the king just like my brother. I am the king just like my fake dad. He's doing that, but he's also, no, look, I'm still as nice as I ever was. Because of course he was nice, even at the start. He was just a coward and, you know. What's the word for it? Hypochondriac, you know, all that stuff.
Right.
Agoraphobic. And now he's kind of got it all. It's really kind... Like I said, it almost saved the series in some respects. Because a lot of writers don't... I may get some flack for this. I'd rather get some, you know, just helpful feedback. Let's share some opinions, because I don't think a lot of writers really undergo character development. I've heard the phrase character development misused and abused a fair bit. But yeah, I'm going to go on record as saying I don't think a satisfactory amount of writers experience any substantial character development. It's nice to see Washaru be forced in, start off backed into a corner, come out of it, get forced into a new corner, and then come out of that with this sort of reconciled multiple personality that he's showing up here. Yeah, I mean, there's so many writers that I love, but if you compare their behavior in episode 1 and their behavior in episode 50 or whatever, there's generally not a lot of change. And I know Washer is kind of an extreme example. He's obviously meant to be. Like, you start a series with a character who's wearing a mask and goggles, and you think, well, obviously he's not going to be wearing those by the end. But he goes through a lot more changes than just, I am brave now. So I like brave and nice Washer, and I always interpreted it that way as kind of being it's like got his perfect form on, almost.
I don't know. especially because...
Well, would it help if I told you not to worry?
Well, I would trust you, because you guys haven't, tried to lead me astray at all.
No. Well, we've watched the series twice, so we know what we're talking about.
Well, it makes me happy to hear that. But things that were disconcerting, he goes to Mio's grave and gives her flowers, and, Taiga's there, and he's
really
like,
horribly
hey,
colored
bro.
Flowers, can I just say?
Really?
What'd you say?
They're a horrible color.
Oh.
The flowers, like, Taiga's are all coordinated with her death
dress.
He's got
a company behind him, though. It's not
fair. Well, no, Washaru's look as fancy. It's just he's chosen to bring them in orange and khaki.
Well,
which was a big combination for a little while in, like, 2000 or 99 or something.
He's old school.
But that's over now. And it shouldn't come back. She's dead. Show her some respect.
Harsh.
Ouch.
Yeah. Harsh words there.
Yeah.
Tell it like it is.
Yeah, but, it was unsettling to me, because it feels like he's confused about his reason for fighting Taiga. Overall, he's doing the right thing, quote-unquote, to protect humanity, but fighting with anger and hatred in his heart towards Taiga, which I feel he has for Mio's death, is such a destructive thing. It could break him, and that's why I'm worried about the future.
Mm.
And let me be worried, because...
Oh, yes, part of the experience.
Sure. Sure thing.
If I may continue.
Yes.
Please.
Yeah, I find it interesting that Taiga doesn't share that Bishop actually killed Mio, but I think he is motivated to fight Watru for the big-ticket item, which is unchallenged Fangara supremacy over humans, as well as to hold on to his brother. Which, that's the little ticket item. They're both twisted and skewed by this awful situation in ways that make them both sympathetic, to some extent.
Yeah, I can agree with that, I think.
I guess.
Tiger doesn't get too much of a chance to explain about Mio.
No.
It's pretty bogus that he doesn't try that hard either, but...
Yeah, he could have just said, like, hey, bro, it was Bishop. Like, let's go kill him.
Yeah, he could.
Sorry, I apologize for saying "Hey, bro." I don't talk like that.
Because it's Taiga.
Yeah, that's true. We know you meant literal brother rather than broski. It's okay. We get it.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. I think. Well, I'm expecting disagreement, so I'm going to go through my Otoya's farewell tour thing,
okay,
which I felt was very stirring.
All of my notes
I'll
for this section
them and then you can,
are about this book.
You can
so.
Wow, okay. I guess I don't have as much to say as you two, so go for it.
Okay. I thought it was very stirring. I got misty watching it on mute while watching it the second time to make my notes. To Yuri, I felt like he gave her a little message of hope. And that his interaction with her was a mark on her growth. And he was telling her, to some extent, like I said earlier, to, like, don't worry, like, get over me, or, I don't know, not in that way, like, don't be sad that I'm gone, because you don't need me, is what I kind of felt he was saying to her. And then to Jiro, specifically. He asks him to protect his son, and shows that he respects him and trusts him. I want to say, like, as an equal, but I was thinking as a man, but I really mean, like, as a person, because he doesn't neglect or reject. He doesn't think it's a bad idea to trust these monsters with his son because he knows them and they're, you know, good people, more or less. They eat people every now and then, but they're, you know, you can forgive it, I guess.
Doesn't mean they don't have principles.
And too, Jiro's line was so awesome, but I imagine you might have something to say about that, Claire. So I'll let you do that. And then to Maya, he, you know, lovingly says goodbye to her and gives her the only thing he can, his song. I typically dislike relationships that start as theirs did, but I feel so sad for them and think their love was something beautiful, and I really enjoyed it. So,
okay,
go ahead.
I'll do mine now, shall I? I don't have that much disagreement, I don't think. I'll start at the top with Yuri, I suppose. The acting is so strong. Again, like it's so good because mostly she's not. Well, it's an unusually shot scene because it's mostly from shot from a distance, and the composition is unusual, and the rain is coming down, so things are harder to hear and such. But she's in the background a lot of the time, and you see her whole body react rather than her face. But it's just so good. It's just so good. It's like whole body, whole being acting. It's subtle and it's not elaborate. She really just looks like a person who feels really awful. And I like that they didn't put her in the rain, so you could tell that she was definitely crying.
Yeah.
Atoya, you jerk! Look at what you did to your friend. You should have just been her friend, and then you wouldn't have hurt her so much. Because they both say how much they enjoyed knowing each other. It didn't have to be dating.
Yeah.
It didn't have to be heartbreak. They could have just been great friends and brought each other nothing but positivity.
Boys and girls can't be friends. There is too much tension. I don't know.
They can, though. I've seen it.
No, they can. I've done it.
I just... He's so... Oh,
rubbish.
Why would you do that? Look what you've done. Yeah. Also,
you're just showing up.
So basically all the points are going to Yuri already.
Yeah.
Here's my bombshell.
We knew that was coming. Yeah.
She's obviously pregnant.
What?
Because Megumi is older than Wataru.
Oh yeah.
And Wataru has to have been conceived by this point because Otori just died.
Right. Yeah.
So wow. She is definitely pregnant.
That's interesting.
Which means it's almost certainly Otoya's, which means that Otoya is probably Megumi's dad. There's no in-universe explanation that avoids this, because I would be extremely surprised if we were supposed to think that she'd slept with Jiro. We know that they were sharing a bed in Otoya's house. She's pregnant. She's pregnant with his child. And she doesn't bring it up, because this is not about that. I can absolutely believe that if Otoya lived, later she would have told him, she would have expressed, I'm pregnant, we're going to have to do something about this, this is how it's going to be. But it's about their personal relationship at this point, and the end of that, and doing that properly without bringing in other aspects and confusing things with extra emotions and extra obligations and so on. Brilliant. I can't see how that... If they forgot that while they were writing the script, if they forgot that Megumi was supposed to have already been
conceived, I think it's quite
conceived,
likely. Yeah.
It's technically possible, but someone should have remembered. Like, someone must have remembered. I think that at least on some level it must be in there for real.
The amount of graves with dates on that we see Mio's, you know, you can actually pin it down.
Yeah,
it's funny. I like to believe it, sure. It puts the scene in different contexts.
It does.
Fury's just like...
But it doesn't make either of them...
I have found a new man, and, you know, yeah.
It doesn't really make either of them look worse, I don't think.
No.
It just makes everything that bit more.
Yeah.
And it adds an extra layer to the whole legacy thing and so on and so on, and Megumi and Wataru's relationship even. Because, I mean, she, when they first meet, she's like, call me Onii-san.
Yeah, that's really funny. Yeah. Or, I mean, it just works so well.
Yeah. I wouldn't be... I wouldn't really be surprised if that was the complete intent from the whole time, but they just didn't make it overt because it's a children's show and that's rude.
It's funny what they can and can't say, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Very strange. In this show where people definitely have sex.
Yeah, but they don't
no
say.
Kissing. Yeah, I love it.
They because they make the mildest references to the idea of sex when Naga is telling them off for cohabiting. He's clearly saying, you're yeah. having sex and that is naughty, but he doesn't actually say it in words. He just, we understand it because we know how people talk about sex without actually talking about sex.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's that section. Moving next. On to the next one.
Please do.
I thought it was really neat how Jiro noticed Otoya's misty feet.
Yeah.
He's all see-through. He doesn't mention it.
No.
But he pays a little more attention.
His wolf sense.
My throat got really sore. With this scene coming straight after the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Really sore. Because,
We do have a cold.
No, it wasn't a cold.
Okay.
It was emotions.
Oh.
Just because Otoya asking Jiro to, look out for Wataru. Because he thinks he's going to have a life full of hardships. I thought about that for a second, and I thought that's actually incredibly sad. Because if you love someone, and you know you can't comfort them, that's a terrible feeling. Mm. But if you love someone and you know you can't ever meet them or comfort them for their whole life, and they're just a child, and they're Wataru, that's terribly sad.
Yeah.
That's an enormous thing to ask someone. And he's not saying tuck him in at night. He's just saying make sure he doesn't get killed. That's really sad. That's a huge loss that he's acknowledging in this tiny, tiny way. And I felt really bad for Wataru because it made me think about how lonely and sad and lonely he must have been through his whole life. Not just as Wataru the adult we've seen, but like just as a child, any child. If your parents aren't there, poor babies. And then his death scene, I thought was quite nice. I did like that, I thought he was gonna, I forgot how it went during the first time, but I thought he was gonna be playing his violin in the park, or like, I'm the best, blah, blah, and then like fall down, it was gonna be dramatic. I was really glad that that was not the case, because I thought it was very effective and very intimate, I suppose, that he dies with his head on Maya's lap and she's stroking his hair. It was very small scale. I suppose domestic. It's I like the protective element that she brings to their relationship. Mm. I think it's an interesting dynamic because no one has really needed or tried to protect him in that patriarchal way, almost.
Yeah,
like, I don't want to say there's a motherly element. There kind of is, but that makes it sound creepy and weird. It's not like she is his mum. It's just how a woman cares for someone. It's the same as how a man does, but when you say it as a woman, then it begins to sound different because of sexism ingrained in our language. And psyches over many centuries. That's that.
Okay.
Didn't really Very disagree good. At all.
No, I guess not. Good.
What did you think I would disagree about?
I thought you were going to be, mostly his interaction with Yuri.
What did you think I was going to say?
I thought you were going to say...
Horrible man.
Well, he is.
Yeah.
I guess that's it. No, I mean, earlier you kind of made reference to not being happy with how he left her, and I thought there would be a little more on that, but there wasn't. So
I'm glad we.
Well, I'm not happy that he did these terrible things to her, but at least he acknowledged that she's better than that.
Right.
It was probably the most respect of her as a person that he's ever shown. Finally, after he's dated her and discarded her, and now he can see her as a real person. Because he doesn't need to impress her as a lady anymore. What a chump. There you go, I've done it now.
Okay, there you go. but a noble chump. And then the final thing, and then we're going to get out of here. Nago's blindness feels a bit tacked on, and it bothers me.
He hasn't been wearing his prescription glasses. Make his eyes look all silly. Why did this feel tacked on to you? I mean, apart from the fact that it is.
Just because there's already so much drama going on, especially with my fears for Wataru.
It's biblical. I know it's weird for me to say that to you.
Yeah, but, like, hasn't he already been... Haven't the scales already fallen from his eyes?
Have they?
More biblical.
Fully, have they?
Do you know what, actually, right? You say it's tacked on. For me, something like Saga is tacked on. The idea that this character conveniently has a suit of armor with an arbitrarily different aesthetic to Kiva is tacked on. A character suddenly having sight issues, that's brilliant for me. That's just writing.
Like, something's gotta
maybe
be
we come from different schools of thought. Yeah, but I like that, you know? I remember as a kid, for some reason I watched soap operas when I was a kid. I can't stand them now, but I watched British soap operas when I was a little kid. And I always thought, and I'm sure I asked my parents this, why does no one ever trip over or sneeze? They kill each other.
Mm.
They yell. They commit crimes. They argue. They run around. They fight. They drink. They eat. They break up. They fall in love. But they don't trip over. They don't sneeze. They don't stumble over their words. Unless a scene is explicitly supposed to be funny. And I knew that that was bad. I like that whole, I mean, honestly, spoiler, but it is explained why he's losing his sight in the very next episode. But even if it was just a completely naturalistic, there's a problem with his eyes because he's a human being. That gets me much more invested in a fictional world than any amount of, you know, power-ups.
Well, it just felt like, it was Bishop. Bishop hit him with his little butterfly sword, like, in the face.
Yeah, you didn't notice that. Yeah.
Yeah,
it
but
is
like.
Intentional.
Yeah, I get it, but it's just. I think because it was in the last, like, 45 seconds of the episode, that's why. Had it been done 5 minutes prior, I would have probably felt differently about it. But it just. The fact that it is factually tacked on to the episode really threw me. And who knows? I might enjoy it in 47 and 48.
Well,
or whatever. I assume it'll be resolved in 47.
The most I can say is that it has a happy outcome. I'll tell you that much. So, I mean, obviously, you know, it's been done for, like, this. They've got a plan for this, this short-sighted gimmick.
Right.
Something's gonna happen. And don't worry, because it's nice.
Okay. Is there spit and dirt involved at all?
There might be a bit of dirt. A
tiny bit of dirt.
Okay.
Technically spit, but I won't elaborate on that.
Okay, then I'm...
Yeah, I get it. Head. I get it. Claire's making a joke for me and you, listener. Our host will have to wait and see what she's getting at.
All right. Okay, and with that, I thank you two for joining me, and
thank
the listeners for being along with us, and we will continue the Kiva audiobook next time with 47 and 48.
The end?
And, yeah, that's it.
Wow.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Goodbye, everybody. Every Doyle. Joke is for us.
If you experience any complications, would like to make a testimonial, or have any questions, send your correspondence to uncommoncastrx@gmail.com or contact us via Twitter @needsmoreailiff, @gomasq, @illustratorclaire, @nejirayon, @professorwhat, @sonyourface, at Where's My Hen. On behalf of everyone, this is Amit saying we hope you have enjoyed this dose of the cure for the Kamen Rider show. I run the show's Twitter feed at UncommonRx, as well as the Toll Network feed at Trial of Heroes, where you can keep up to date on all our shows, including Moonspeak, a bi-monthly Sailor Moon Crystal show discussing the ongoing series. Subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, your favorite RSS reader, or visit trialofheroes.wordpress.com to get it all.